Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The United States is not and will never be at war with Islam. We will convey our deep appreciation for the Islamic faith, which has done so much over the centuries to shape the world, including in my own country.
He's an Arab. He is not.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. He's a decent family man, citizen that I just happen to have disagreements with on fundamental issues, and that's what this campaign is all about. He's not. Thank you.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work like a slave.
Thank you, John McShane, for giving us the stealth enemy of America we've all feared. Thank you, John. You shall go down in infamy. You shamed your family, McCain. Your grandfather was a great admiral. Your father was a great admiral. Thank you, John, for being part of the cluster, you know what. Now, I'm going to say something to you right now. Either Obama is ideologically and dangerously naive, like the Egyptian pharaoh Akhenaten. It doesn't matter whether he is ideological and dangerously naive or he is a stealth activist for an enemy of America. It makes no difference. He is as much a national security risk to this nation as Cheney and Bush were in their own way. We are being undermined left and right under Obama. The man who put him in power, in my opinion, is George Soros. George Soros, the money changer in the Temple of Freedom. George Soros came out and said that the dollar has to be replaced by a basket of world currencies. This basket case, for whom there is not enough profit in the entire world, he is the nowhere man who will suck the world into his horn. It doesn't matter to him what happens as long as he makes more money. Soros, an immigrant to America who could not wait to cut America's heart out, has said that he would like to see the U.S. dollar replaced as the world currency. He would like to see it replaced by a basket of currencies. Now, remember who's saying this. This is the man who put Obama in power, number one. This is the man who made $1 billion by shorting the English pound. This is the man who stirred up anti-Semitism around the world by almost busting out the Malaysian currency. This man now wants to break the U.S. dollar over his knee. So I say to you, Obama is either ideologically and dangerously naive, like the Egyptian pharaoh Akhenaten, or he is a stealth underminer of America. It doesn't really matter which one. He is a national security risk, in my opinion. Now, what's interesting is a poll came out over the weekend, and it's a poll from the Pew Research Center, which is a left-wing poll. But even they say that the partisan gap in the Obama job approval is the widest in modern history. Now, let me explain that because it's very interesting. Obama has the most polarized early job approval ratings of any president in the past four decades. Let me explain what that means. He has a high Democratic poll rating, very, very high, but he has a very low approval rating among Republicans. So you say, well, isn't that typical? No, it's not typical. Because there is an 88% job approval among Democrats, and an only 27% job approval among Republicans. That's a 51% partisan gap. A 51% partisan gap, right? But if you look at the difference in George W. Bush's job performance in April of his administration, a few months into his term, there was a much smaller gap. Democrats actually liked Bush in the beginning, you see. And if you go back even to Bill Clinton, the gap between Clinton's Democrat approval and Republican approval was substantially smaller than what Obama faces right now And if you go back even further, you will see an even smaller differential, even amongst Jimmy Carter and Richard Nixon. In fact, the majority of Republicans approved of Jimmy Carter's job performance in late March of 1977, and a majority of Democrats approved of Nixon's performance at a comparable point in his first term. This is fascinating. Now, here we have a president who has polarized America. He has not brought hope or change. He has brought division. He goes to Europe. North Korea fires a rocket. The man whines to the United Nations and does nothing. He could have shot down the missile. He could have blown up the launch pad. Instead, he whined to the UN and they said, you know what, we can't do anything. We now have not only Neville Chamberlain in the White House, we have something more. But I want to go back to Obama saying that Islam has made, I don't know the word, did he say shape? Change it again. I want to run it again.
We will convey our deep appreciation for the Islamic faith, which has done so much over the centuries to shape the world, including in my own country.
Now, hold on. He says, including in my own country. If he said shape the world, including in my own country, I would disagree with him. If he said shake the world, including in my own country, I would agree with him. I have a question for you. Can you think of one contemporary Islamic contribution to America other than Obama? One contemporary Islamic contribution to America other than Barack Hussein Obama? And did he say shape or shake the world? If that isn't enough, there's much more today on the Savage Nation. Let's make it very personal. I have noticed that Fox News has created a sub-organization on their web called Fox Nation. They are the next in line to steal from the most creative man in the media, Michael Savage, the Fox Nation stolen from the Savage Nation. I ask you a question. Across the media landscape, my ideas are appearing without any attribution. Who in the media has stolen ideas from Michael Savage that you know of? When is the last time you were watching television or listening to the radio and said to yourself, wait a minute, hold it, I heard that first on Michael Savage's show? 1-800-449-8255. Obama and the Muslim world. Obama and the Muslim world. Now, he said that the United States is not at war with Islam. He is right about that. But unfortunately, many in the Islamic world are at war with the United States. He left that out. The fact of the matter is that Islam, as it is practiced by many extremists around the globe, is incompatible with the modern world. The radical Islamo-fascists still treat their women like cattle. The radical Islamo-fascists still stone homosexuals to death. The radical Islamo-fascists still live in a way that has not changed since the 9th century. In a fundamental way, Islam and the West are at war. Call it a Cold War, if you will. But I'm not sure that the victims of 9-1-1, the victims of the Bali bombing, the victims of the Madrid bombing, or the victims of the London bombing, or even the bombings in Bombay, I don't think that their families would agree with Obama. Another thing that Obama said in his speech, which was curious, to say the least, is that Islam has done much for the United States. It was sort of an add-on. I challenge you, listening to the show, to be fair here on the Savage Nation, can you think of one contemporary Islamic contribution to America other than Paul Anka and Barack Hussein Obama? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Chicago, George, you're first up. Go ahead, please.
Islam given contributions to the world. I guess the Persian Empire, the Ottoman Empire, I see they brought just death and destruction to the world. I can't see what they've done.
I don't know why the president is going around kissing the robes of all of these Muslim nations. What's this all about?
I have no idea. You know, I'm from Greek descent. I'm first generation in this country, and I go to my folks, and my folks get the feed from Greece. And all the people in Greece were chanting and were so happy when they were against Israel during the little war they just had a couple months ago, and now they're screaming because Obama went to Turkey and not to Greece. I mean, I'm trying to figure out through all of history. That's why I like your show, Mike, is that you always deal with the history going on from centuries.
Well, let me give you a piece of history. Notice what I opened with. It went over, you know, a lot of heads because it was fast. I said either Obama is ideologically and dangerously naive And I gave a historical example like the Egyptian pharaoh Akhenaten, A-K-H-E-N-A-T-O-N, or he is operating for other powers. I don't know, but it doesn't matter. He is still a national security risk. Did you read that he is dismembering the U.S. military, including our missile defense shield? What is that all about?
I don't know what that's all about. Same thing, like he wants to get rid of nukes, you know, here out in Chicago.
He wants to get rid of nukes while Kim Jong-il fires a rocket upon which he wants to place a nuke? While Iran says drop dead, we'll do whatever we want? This man takes down a missile defense shield, the funding for it. He eliminates the F-22 fighter. Which side is he on? Is he working for the enemy? Nobody knows anymore with this guy. Thanks for the call. James in Illinois, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I wanted to just comment. I believe that the Arabs contributed the Arabic numerals.
Well, we know that the Arabs contributed the Arabic numeral system, numbering system. That we understand. They replaced the cumbersome Roman numeral system, but that's not the point. Obama said that the Islamic world has contributed much to this nation. Let's talk about contemporary contributions. Can you think of one?
The anatomy of books that they contributed. I mean, they were the first.
But the anatomy of what?
I'm sorry. Big fan. They were the first to really write any in-depth books on the anatomy of the human body.
Okay, again, you're not hearing me. Apparently, I'm not communicating, and I think I specialize in communication. Obama goes to Europe. Obama goes to Turkey, and he says that Islam has made major contributions to the world. They have shaped or shaked, I don't know which one, the world, including my own country. How has Islam shaped America?
I don't think they've shaped America. They've definitely shaped the rest of the world, though, because there's this increase in France on up here, the Arab population.
Of course they've shaped the world. Through three of their crusades, they killed hundreds of thousands of Christians and Jews to subjugate them and convert them to Islam. It was only the Spaniards and the French, who still had you-know-whats, who stopped them from converting all of Europe to Islam. But with men like this, I don't think they need the bomb or the sword to complete the job. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Mr. Obama has said that Islam has shaped the world, including my own country, and I'm asking a very straightforward question on the Savage Nation. Can you think of one contemporary Islamic contribution to America other than Obama? I then asked you who in the media has been ripping me off without attribution, and I've given one example, the Fox Nation. I'd like to hear from you. Miami, Florida, Miguel, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Savage, how about the Weeper on Fox News?
Oh, the hemorrhoid with eyes?
Yes, yes.
What's he doing?
Well, you know how nobody on the mainstream media talks about how Obama's going to take us more to, you know, the extreme way he's going to take, you know.
No, I know. He listens to the show every day and then copies it the next day with graphics. You got to give it to the hemorrhoid. He's not bad.
Mm-hmm. I felt like you got hired on Fox News. I really did.
No, the hemorrhoid with eyes does have a very good pair of ears. I got to hand it to him.
Yes, yes. And also, you know, he's also...
Well, what's with the overacting? What's with the overemphasis of everything and the crying? What's that all about?
No, and the music, too, you know, and how in the back, you know, they...
I mean, I'm afraid the guy's going to have a nervous breakdown on the air.
Exactly.
You know, I feel any day they happen to come take him away. I mean, this guy's on the edge every day. He's about to go over the edge. All right. Good luck to him. Personally, I think the guy's going to have a crack up on the air, which will be very good for ratings. Thanks for the call. Justin, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage, I just wanted to mention the wall banger. I was watching his show last night on Fox and happened to notice on April 9th, he's doing a show, Six Ways to Save America, which sounded strikingly familiar to your list of 10 Ways to Save America.
Oh, yes, my famous 10 Ways to Save America. Well, look, for a man who went to high school and has outgrown his jeans, he's not a bad guy. I mean, he doesn't do badly. He began as a fill-in for Rush Limbaugh, and look where it's gotten him. You know, I wouldn't mind the guy so much if he just stopped with the OU kid, I'm a young guy, good-looking guy thing. He's a little old for it, and his thighs have gotten a little thick for those dungarees, don't you think?
I don't look at his legs much, but
I do. I look at his legs. I mean, he's a TV guy. Thank God I'm not on television. No, but I want to talk about more fundamental things rather than looks, which is ripping off my ideas, which is very, very nice. As Lao Tzu said, you know, that's the greatest form of compliment. You know what's interesting, Justin, is that the people of this show who listen to me, they know it when it's ripped off. I mean, when I saw the Fox Nation, I said, wow, that's really great. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255. What have the Muslims contributed to America, as Mr. Obama has said? Let's go to Anna in New York on WOR. Anna, go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I can think of four things that have been very problematic for women and our cultural...
No, not problematic. Obama said that Islam has made contributions that have shaped or shaken the world, including my own country. He tacked that on. So I said I couldn't think of one contemporary Islamic contribution to America other than Obama. Can you give us one?
I think that the word contribution is at risk there, and it's the wrong word. I think he should be referring to beheading of wives.
So that's a contribution that puts that keeps women in line. There you go.
In the 7th century.
There you go. That's another contribution.
I mean, you're absolutely right.
What about genital mutilation? That's another contribution to our society.
Yeah.
They had to stop a few of the Somalis from using old butter knives.
Right, and that's going on today.
Oh, but that's their culture. Isn't it all equal? Didn't the homosexuals teach America to accept all cultures as equal and all activities as equal? Didn't they break down America's resistance to any kind of morality by saying, if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? Here's where we end up.
Here's where we end up, Anna.
See, I know that I'm the doctor who understands where the disease began. Many of you see the disease, but you don't understand the genesis of the disease of cultural equality. Don't you understand that what moral equivalence has led us to, where they've taught you not to be judgmental? That is how the radical Islamists have stuck their nose in the tent, so to speak, and introduced these barbaric customs to America. It's because you were told to shut your pie hole and say nothing or be called a racist. And here we are today, Barack Hussein Obama, their mouthpiece.
Savage.
The United States has been enriched by Muslim Americans. Many other Americans have Muslims in their families or have lived in a Muslim-majority country.
Like Abu
I know
Jamal.
Because I am one of them. We will convey our deep appreciation for the Islamic faith, which has done so much over the centuries to shape the world, including in my own country.
Now, he tacks that on, including in my own country. How have they shaped the world since there was an almost zero Muslim population until quite recently? How has Islam shaped our country? Why is he saying these things? Why did he kiss the Saudi king's hand last week when all of the other leaders only shook the king's hand, which is acceptable from the point of view of protocol? Why did this man bow down to him? It's very frightening. Very, very frightening indeed. Everything we feared during the election is coming home to roost. The problem is the sheeple out there don't even understand the danger they are in. The sheeple never understand the danger they are in until it's too late. Yeah, that's the story. There it is. Kansas City, Bill, you're up. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Hey, Savage, you were talking about how folks in the media were ripping you off without attribution. Wanted to give you another example of that. I was on your website the other day and saw where the story about Obama supplying Acorn with the list of donors
yes.
in violation of campaign law.
Yes.
Well, lo and behold, the very next day, saw it on the Leprechaun show on Fox News. Naturally, he didn't mention where he got it from.
Well, look, my website is a conglomeration of other news outlets, whether it be AP, Reuters, or newspapers, so I don't own that story. I think that the LEP is now using my website as show prep, as many people do. So I'm going to actually stop posting stories on it until the show begins, about 5 minutes to the show. I don't want to do show prep for the idiots who don't do their own. Austin, Texas. Dan, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I remember you saying that not all Muslims are terrorists, but nearly all terrorists are Muslims. And then I recall hearing that exact same thing in Hannity.
Well, as I say, for a young man who went through high school, he does very well. He tries very hard, puts on a very good performance. And I respect him for that. You know, it's just like when you have someone in the family, they do the best they can. That's all. You don't have to put them down. For a man who has no educational background and no knowledge of history, science, poetry, or literature, he does a very, very good job of convincing people that he has the flag wrapped around himself and he's invincible. But to me, that's typical of those in the media. Now, if you say I'm sitting up here like God Almighty looking down on him, that's wrong. But I'll be done if I'm going to sit here and get blindsided by these people in the media who rip me off and put me down and not fight back. They're wrong. As far as I am concerned, and I'll say it right now, and you heard it first in the Savage Nation, Rush Limbaugh is the General Motors of talk radio. Wallbanger is the Chrysler of talk radio. And both of them have been propped up by TARP funds, which is the Republican Party itself. If it was not for the TARP listenership of Republican Party boobs, Rush, the General Motors of talk radio, would have been out of business. Wallbanger, the Chrysler of talk radio, would have been out of business. I am the smallest one in the major leagues. I am the underdog, and I will fight with everything in me against General Motors and the Chrysler of talk radio. And if they want to start a war with me, well, let's get it on, my friends. Thanks for the call. Sacramento, Edward, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Islam contributed submission to the United States. I can explain. I'm from the Middle East. I'll tell you why. When Pelosi went to Syria, she put a burqa on her head and stood up in the parliament. When you put a burqa on a woman, you subjugated her. She became one.
Well, why doesn't she put one on here and shut her mouth? That would be a blessing.
And
if the next time she opened up her big yap, she put on a cloth and was as subdued here as she is there, I would say they did us a favor.
When Obama bowed down a few days ago, he subjugated himself to the king. He became a slave. That's what the meaning in that.
Why is it that not one other leader of the world bowed down to the king or curtsied to him as Obama did? Why? What do you think that was all about?
I think he learned it in his past. I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, you don't do that to a head of state. He should have gone with a...
He is an embarrassment to this nation. He is a living embarrassment to this nation, this green president. You know, Alfred E. Obama is not ready for prime time, and there's no reason we have to say the king has clothes. This king has no clothes, my friend. Thanks for the call. Sarasota, Harry, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I believe that everything that Barack Obama does is for a purpose. I think he's going to worsen every crisis that he can in order to get people more scared and more desperate in order to affect.
I agree. Keep them scared. Keep them medicated so that you can subjugate them. Frighten, medicate, subjugate. Frighten, medicate, subjugate.
In his background, you know, this guy, his mother was a communist. She used to argue the communist and Marxist position at the university.
Let's hold on. I know she was a free spirit who ran off with many different men, and then they left her. They jilted her after having children with her. But how do you know she was a communist?
Well, there's many accounts of her arguing the Marxist-communist position, like the nation does with those people over there, that Russia was a great idea. But the ideals went a little sour, you see.
Obama's mom was a Sharon Golightly, you know, very flighty, left, by the way, abandoned him for her own needs several times in his development, which makes him a very insecure man inside. You know that.
Exactly. You're the first one to bring that out.
Do you know that I did an entire show way back when on Obama's woman problem? Do you remember that program?
I missed it, unfortunately.
No, that was an amazing show. It came and went, but it was really brilliant. I wish we could dig it up, Beowulf. I was talking about his mother being flighty, having abandoned him several times during his development. He had to be brought up by his white grandmother, who sacrificed for him, and what that did to him as a man.
That's it. I mean, his psychological profile is horrible. This man is looking for father figures everywhere and every...
Wow. Okay, the father figure thing fits in with the king of Saudi Arabia. So he becomes the big kingfish to him.
Right.
The king of Saudi Arabia, he finally went before Kingfish.
That's who he wished his father was, someone like that. And he's, even today, he's marked for life because he's not going to get counseling, let's face it. I mean, you know.
No, he'll give the rest of us counseling. He has to act out on the world stage his insecurities, and we're seeing the results of it. But let's put aside all of this. Everyone has something in their background. This man is ideologically and dangerously naive. That's the main thing. Or there's something more to it than naivete. But the man is cutting the defense budget. The man is cutting back even on the missile defense shield. Why would he do that, since that is a defensive military weapon? It is not an offensive one. Why would he do that?
Because he believes, like the left does, that people like us when we're weak. When we're weak, then we're just like everybody else. You know, it's like,
in other words, the only cop that is good is a dead cop. The only American soldier that is a good soldier is a dead soldier.
Rolling
is
on.
That why CNN suddenly can't wait to get their vicious images out of dead American soldiers so that you can weep for them and say war is bad? Of course war is bad, but subjugation is worse, isn't it?
Doctor, it's the
war is horrible, but being a slave is worse.
Apology of pacifism.
We lived through, I didn't live through it. I was not born yet, but Neville Chamberlain could be the archetype for Obama. Neville Chamberlain was another naive man who went to Germany while Hitler was on the move and said that Hitler and England, the Anglo-German pact, blah, blah, blah. And then Hitler the next few weeks went and invaded another country. I think Obama's very much like Chamberlain. They're in the same mold, socialist, pacifist. That's a positive view, by the way, of Obama. I'm not so sure it's as positive as that. I have a terrifying feeling he may actually be something worse than that. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. And again, I am asking you for ideas that have been stolen from me and by whom. We go to Washington, D.C. WTNT, Isabel, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage. Right after I heard you mention trickle-up poverty, I heard the golfer say it, and he keeps on repeating it over and over.
Yeah, well, look, they can translate for him through the hearing aid whatever they robbed from me, so that's nice. I'm sure he didn't hear it directly.
Okay, and I also have a comment on what Muslims
Let me tell you about Rush. Rush is the biggest ripoff artist in the history of radio, and he never acknowledges anybody he steals from. You ask anybody in the business, they'll tell you the same thing. Rush is the General Motors of talk radio. He's never invented a novel idea in his life. Everything he uses is from somebody else. And just like General Motors, as sure as I'm sitting here, this man is propped up by TARP funds called Republican Party boosters. And if they want to attack me, and if they want to support my enemies, then I'm going to go on the assault. Rush is the General Motors of talk radio. Wallbanger is the Chrysler of talk radio. And if they want to attack the little guy, let them keep doing it, because I'll be around long after they are. I can guarantee you this. I have tremendous knowledge of what's coming in this media landscape. They don't. They do not understand that they are the General Motors and Chrysler of talk radio. And they're on an ice floe, and they're drifting south. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Chicago, George, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I wanted to say one of the Muslim contributions to this country has been our ability to have a blue water navy for the last 205 years.
Again, I will say, can you think of one contemporary, emphasis on the word contemporary, Islamic contribution to America other than Obama?
They have kept us on our toes.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're being slightly sarcastic.
Slightly.
Yes, the U.S. Navy was created. People don't understand that, but again, I was the first in the media to explain it, because Muslim pirates off the coast of Africa, off the Barbary coast, Muslim pirates were boarding merchant ships and killing the crew and stealing the goods, just as Muslim pirates are doing it today off Africa. It got so bad that the U.S. had to create warships to accompany cargo ships. And the early name Leathernecks, the U.S. Marines who were the military aboard the Navy ships, the word leatherneck was used to describe the large, thick piece of leather that the troops used around their neck to protect them from the swipe of Muslim swords. And yes, in that regard, the Muslims have contributed greatly. by forcing our ancestors in this country to create a U.S. Navy. But now we have someone in the White House who is literally cutting back on the production of ships, planes, and defensive weapons.
God,
thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Mike in Oregon, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Salman Rushdie, a talented Islamic author. Of course, there's a death sentence on his head.
Sir, again, what are you talking about? Obama said that Islam has made great contributions in shaping the world, including our own country. How has Salman Rushdie shaped America?
His authorship, an insight into the Islamic world, opened my eyes to some of their thought processes and practices.
I see. And what are those thought processes that you learned from Mr. Rushdie?
That it was once a great society and empire, and it's in decline.
It's in decline. Then why does our president worship the Islamic world as though it is a role model for this society?
Good question. I'm glad you're asking it.
If it is in decline, why is he going there and kissing the king's robes?
Oil?
Why is the king of Saudi Arabia not coming here? But then again, it didn't start with him. The famous picture of Bush being led around by his pinky. Do you remember that one?
Yes, I do.
Thank you very much. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We are focusing on our great leader who has gone to Europe and embarrassed America by kissing the royal, the Saudi royals' hand, basically. No other world leader did that. By saying he wants to disarm our nukes while Kim Jong-il fires a rocket. One misstep after another, and the American people are very, very polarized by this man. Democrat support remains high. Republican support is very low. You would say that is typical. It is atypical, according to polls. Even Richard Nixon had large Democrat support in the early days of his administration. And Jimmy Carter had large Republican support in the early days of administration. So the man has become the greatest divider in the history, in modern history of American politics. Make no mistake about it. Okay, so let's get your calls up here now. TJ in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Savage, thanks for having me. Real quick, I'm seeing this a little differently than some of you guys are seeing it. Hello?
We're listening. Go ahead.
Oh, okay, I'm so sorry. Obama's words and actions, I think I'm seeing it as he's appealing to the moderate Arabs. You know, he's trying to chip away at the potential buyers to the radical plan.
All right, let's review that. Of course that's what he's doing. But let me explain something. George Bush took a hard approach toward the moderate to the Muslim world. They hated him anyway. This one's taking a pacifist approach. They're going to hate him anyway. Don't you understand that you can't reason with a terrorist?
Well, could I throw this at you and you could play with this? I see Bush as he was black and white in his approach, which had advantages at times. You know, a lot of people knock Bush, but, you know,
Bush's mistake was starting strong and ending like a lamb. He came in like a lion. He went out like a lamb. That'll be stolen tomorrow by General Motors wall banger. But the fact is, he came in like a lion. He went out like a lamb. This one's coming in like a lamb, and God only knows how he's going to go out. How he's going to leave this country is what I'm concerned about, not about his legacy. You cannot appease radical terrorists. You can't do it. They see you as a weakling.
Right. I think it's a fair point to argue, and I know people are upset.
Let me explain something. We can talk about this and talk about how many angels there are in the head of a pin as well. If you speak to cops in high-crime neighborhoods who have been in running gun battles with highly armed gangs, they will tell you that you can't appease gangs by sending out peace officers.
You have a great point, but where I think we...
When you send out peace officers, you get four coffins, like they did in Oakland. Thanks to Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, Ron Dellums, and Barbara Lee. They said, be peace officers with the gangs of Oakland. They wound up dead, shot in the neck. It's the same on the international level, TJ. The only thing these people understand is force and power. It's a truism going back to the beginning of time. Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. Nothing whatsoever. This man is, I started the show tonight on the Savage Nation with a very minor historical reference. I said, like the Egyptian pharaoh Akhenaten, Obama is ideologically and dangerously naive. But nevertheless, he is as much a national security risk, one way or the other. And I added, as was Cheney and Bush, a national security risk for their ideologies. We have suffered under disastrous leadership ever since Bill Clinton. We had 16 years of Clinton and Bush, and now we have a few months of Obama, and it's not gotten any better, it's gotten worse. He has not made us a stronger, safer country. He has made us a weaker, less safe country by catering and begging and groveling. That is one man's opinion. Now, if you disagree with me, that is wonderful. Explain it to me, though. You have to justify it. We are all reasonable people on the Savage Nation. Reason with us. Come into the Savage Nation and reason with us. Reason with us. What will we get by appeasing the Muslim world? Tell me what we will gain from this. Tell me. John in New York, WOR, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
This man, I believe, is working with the bad guys. This man had a reverend who hated the United States. This man has a wife that hates the United States.
Well, hold on. I'll agree with you that Reverend Wright hated America and white people. I will not agree with you that she hates the United States. She has a hostility towards this nation. I don't think she's a hater. I think she's a very hostile first lady.
Wants to destroy this country any way he can. Me, I have a part-time job. I had your show on one time. I got reprimanded because it happens to be the building I work at is full of African-American people, and I can't listen to it because it offends people. You sent me 12 hats last year. I was going to make my softball team the Savage Nation. I'm not allowed because...
You're not allowed? What country do you live in? Russia of the 1950s or the United States in the year 2009? Tell them to shove it where the sun doesn't shine if they don't like it. You can sue them. You're an American, for God's sakes.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The United States is not and will never be at war with Islam. The United States has been enriched by Muslim Americans. Many other Americans have Muslims in their families or have lived in a Muslim-majority country. I know because I am one of them.
He's an Arab. He is not...
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. He's a decent family man, citizen that I just happen to have disagreements with on fundamental issues, and that's what this campaign is all about. He's not. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Thanks, John. You broke the chain of loyalty to this country as far as I'm concerned. You flop, you. Can you think of one contemporary Islamic contribution to America? And please don't tell me about the numerals again. That was quite a long time ago. I at the last hour, mentioned to you that our president, who has made one blunder after another, is ideologically and dangerously naive, and he is a national security risk as far as I am concerned. And I have elucidated why I stated that. It wasn't just rhetoric based upon wish fulfillment fantasy. I also said to you that he had a flighty mother who abandoned him several times during his formative years for men. She left him, as a matter of fact, totally to pursue her own interests. And as a result, he was left psychologically needing a mother and a father. I told you that a while ago I did a show called Obama on the Couch. It may have been last October or November. Luckily for the listeners to this show, I have a great staff, and they found the original one-pager that I wrote called Obama on the Couch, and I'm going to read it to you right now. Some of it is dated, but it still makes sense. September 10th, 2008. Are you listening, Wallbanger? Wallbanger, turn up the volume, Wallbanger. September 10th, 2008. Wallbanger, hello, golfer, are you listening? Have you put down the liquid? Here we go, Obama on the Couch. The media is filled today with Obama's attack on Sarah Palin. Barack Hussein Obama compared Sarah Palin to a pig with lipstick. This is the beginning of the end of Obama's love affair with women. But what exactly is Obama's problem with women? Why have white women abandoned his campaign in droves? To find the answer, we must return to Obama's childhood and examine his relationship with his mother. In 1961, Obama's mother, Ann Dunham, married Obama's father, a man from Kenya. Less than 3 years later, they were divorced. In 1967, his mother married another man, this time an Indonesian. A few years later, she was divorced again. How many were between and after these is unknown. Through all this time, Obama's mother went globetrotting, from Hawaii to Indonesia to Pakistan. Sometimes she took her young son with her, sometimes she left him behind. What appears to have happened to Obama as a result is he developed symptoms of what psychologists refer to as an Oedipal complex. In an Oedipal complex, a male child is fixated on his mother and competes with his father for maternal attention. In such cases, a critical point of awakening occurs where the child realizes that the mother has affections for others besides himself. In this case, Obama had to compete with multiple paternal stand-ins and was never fully able to bond with his mother. The result seems to have been a resentment towards women that he has never been able to get beyond. Furthermore, excessive separation within an Oedipal complex leads to a sense of helplessness that can in turn lead to patterns of idealized control and self-sufficiency. Obama's mother sent him to live away from her when he was 10 and again when he was 14. It seems clear that this excessive separation in the absence of a father has led to a pattern of idealized control that Obama has not only imposed on himself, but now wants to impose on the United States of America. So Obama's mother was a free spirit who traipsed around the world with multiple different men. And while there's nothing wrong with that in itself, you can't ignore the effect that it had on her children, especially when one of those children wants to be president. So here are the questions I wrote, again, September 10, 2008. Do you think Obama has a woman problem? Does he have an Oedipal complex? And there it is. I guess you didn't think that that could be done on American Talk Radio today. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. There are many other stories, many other topics, many other different ways to approach this. And we can do it in all of these ways. Now, Obama, the president, is asking us to forego our nuclear weapons. He is cutting the defense budget, eliminating the F-22 Raptor fighter, eliminating even the defensive missile defense shield, which I cannot understand for the life of me, other than he is catering to Russia, who does not want us to have a missile defense shield for obvious reasons. I cannot understand how anyone listening to this program, whether they're a Democrat or a Republican, can't understand the danger this naive, ideologically naive man is putting us in. Listen to clip four.
Now, one of those issues that I'll focus on today is fundamental to the security of our nations and to the peace of the world. That's the future of nuclear weapons in the 21st century. The existence of thousands of nuclear weapons is the most dangerous legacy of the Cold War. No nuclear war was fought between the United States and the Soviet Union. But generations lived with the knowledge.
We know all of that. We know all of the history. Can't you make your point, which he does finally, at the end of clip eight, and I want you to speed it up. Please move it to the end of clip eight.
Today, I state clearly and with conviction America's commitment to seek the peace and security of a world without nuclear weapons.
You know, that's something that would play well amongst gays and lesbians at a college somewhere in the Middle West. Unfortunately, the very next day, Kim Jong, mentally ill, the third, launched a rocket upon which they would like to put a nuclear weapon. I have said to you repeatedly during the campaign and after it that he is not to black, he is too green. I stick to that point. He is an ideological naive case. We are in grave danger, in my humble opinion. New York City, Elaine, welcome to the program from WOR. I appreciate your calling.
Michael, oh my God, I love you.
You should.
I'm a black woman from Africa.
I'm sorry, start it. You love me and you're a what, lady?
I'm a black woman. I'm from Africa.
God bless you.
I absolutely love you, Michael. My family wants to kill me.
Elaine, do you know why you love me? Because I sound like a strong, principled, wise man of the type that exists in Africa in traditional communities. A man who sees clearly and speaks clearly is a rarity in this world, whether it be in Africa or in New York City. And that is why you are drawn to this show.
Oh, that's true, Michael. And you speak the truth. You know, you're not a racist. Whether it's Obama or Bush, they're all the same, Michael. And
Thank you for hearing. Thank you for being an educated mind.
Absolutely. And you know what? I believe.
Elaine, which country do you hail from in Africa?
I'm from Cameroon, which is Central Africa.
I know where Cameroon is. I know very well some of the most beautiful people on earth come from your country. How long have you been here?
Love your show.
How long have you been in this country, Elaine?
I've been here for 6 years already.
And do you love it?
I love it. You know what, Mike? I absolutely love it. I came to this country, Michael. I did not know any English. I learned English. I went to college.
How come you could learn English, but the Vietnamese man who shot all those people last week couldn't learn English? Why is that?
That's what I was saying. I learned the language in 2 months, Michael. I went to college.
How long? Wait, Elaine, how long did it take you to learn English?
2 months, Michael. When I came.
Wait, let's back up for a minute. Did you have any English training in Cameroon?
Just the basic, Michael. I knew.
So how did you learn it so fast? You must be a super intelligent lady.
Because when I came in, I started working right away. I was working at a sandwich shop and going to college at the same time.
And what did you graduate in? In what field, Elaine?
Marketing.
And are you currently working?
Yes, I'm actually working in the financial industry, yes.
I am so happy to hear this. This is an American success story. You are the hope for America, women like yourself, Elaine. I really mean this. And I would tell you, I'm going to send you a gift of my wonderful book, Psychological Nudity. Stay in the line. I got a word that the shipment has just arrived. All of you who are waiting for the back order on the third printing, it's going to be shipped today. And now we have a fresh new third printing of that book. And I'm very proud to tell you it'll be shipping all week. Psychological Nudity for free to that young lady. I mean, I can go on and on and on. I hate the words racist and racism. It is so tired. It is so boring. It is the standard argument of the people without argument. It is used strictly to try to disarm the enemy, and it is such a weak attempt. Let us use logic together, ladies and gentlemen. We are all one people in a sense and one nation. Just because we have a polarizer does not mean we have to be polarized. And just because we have a divider in the White House, surrounded by dividers who love crises, does not mean we have to fall for the oldest of tricks used by demagogues going back to the kings of Egypt. I'll be right back. Savage.
Retire 250 of the oldest Air Force tactical fighter aircraft. We will end production of the F-22 fighter at 187. We will not pursue a development program for a follow-on Air Force bomber. We will delay amphibious ship and sea basing programs. We will delay the Navy CGX next generation cruiser program to revisit both the requirements and acquisition strategy.
That is our esteemed Defense Secretary Robert Gates, who was kept on by Obama in order to eviscerate the military, obviously. That is why this bureaucrat kept his job. You know, many of you people don't even understand what's going on. These politicians are dangerous. We understand that. Bush was no different than Obama in that regard. Both were ideologically dangerous in their own way, in their own opposite ways, by the way. But nevertheless, they were security risks for this nation. If we had to believe the liberals, Bush and Cheney were security risks because of their ideology. And I would agree with them at a certain point, but probably for different reasons. But likewise, Obama is a security risk for the safety of the people for different ideological reasons. His pacifism and his socialism are ideologies that are incompatible with freedom. You get that? And by dissembling, disarming America, rather, by taking apart weapon systems, do you think we are made safer in this world where North Korea, this little pipsqueak, dares fire a rocket, even though the world powers, so to speak, say, don't you dare, don't you dare, don't you dare, don't you dare. He says, you know what, take some kimchi and put it where the sun don't shine. And he fires the rocket. And guess what he found out? He can do what he wants. And what do you think Ahmadinejad is going to do the minute they can fire rockets with nuclear weapons on it? They're going to listen to the phonies in Israel who've been saying every day, don't, we'll do it, we'll do. You know how many years I've heard already? You got to do it, we'll do it, you do it. Now Netanyahu's president, suddenly you don't hear it anymore. It was all to get elected. Don't you understand they're all the same? Now the question is, where does this lead? Well, only God knows. But if history is at all an indicator, we have to go back to what old Savage said at the beginning. Obama is like the Egyptian pharaoh Akhenaten, A-K-H-E-N-A-T-O-N. And if there is an Egyptologist listening to the program who would like to articulate who Akhenaten is, you will win a free copy of Psychological Nudity. California Drew, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael. Good to hear from you. I know who Akhenaten was. He established monotheism under the sun god Ra, got rid of the old polytheistic stuff. He was a big-time pacifist. I used to live in Egypt for 2 years back in the early 80s out in Cairo. And,
he was a big-time pacifist. And how did it end for Egypt during at the end of his reign?
Well, that's what I wanted you to expound upon, because I can't really remember what happened with him. I know.
Well, you took us along the road of knowledge. You took us to a very nice turn in the bend. And for that, Drew, I'm giving you one of the first fresh copies, third printing of Psychological Nudity, a book that keeps running off the shelves, staying in line. If there is another listener who thinks they know something about it, fine. Or if you care to comment upon Obama's woman problem or contributions of Islam to contemporary America, I am open to this. Or if you care to comment about Robert Gates being kept on to, you want to say downsize? Some would say, use harsher terms for that, the U.S. military. Go ahead, please. Michigan Barbara, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I think what you said about his mother, Obama, about his mother and about him being a product of this mother that, you know, gallivanted all around the world was really low class.
Well, that's because you're an ignoramus. Either there's a factual error in what I said or you just find it offensive. But it's not that what I said is offensive. It's her behavior that's offensive.
And she's a deceased woman and he's working.
Barbara, wait a minute. Stop your malarkey. Don't play that game with me. I'm not your ex-husband who you threw out of the house.
What
did I say about Obama's mother, Ann Dunham, that was incorrect?
Oh, really?
I asked you, what did I say about Ann Dunham, Obama's mother, that is incorrect, factually wrong?
Really?
Are you hearing me or are you not hearing me? What do you mean, really? What are you using really on me? What do you think, you're in a tea party here? You're on national radio. You said that what I said was offensive. What part of it was offensive and wrong?
It was low class.
You are the low class person because you are not using logic. You are using idiocy and emotions. What part of what I said about Obama's mother was factually incorrect?
Peace. Even with warmongering Israel, warmongering...
Barbara, if you don't answer me, I'm going to hang up on you. I'm going to give you one last chance. What part of my discourse on Obama's psychological problems with women as a result of his mother being flighty is incorrect? Are you there or not there? Would you like to have a discussion? You're not in a university right now where you can scare people.
I don't think...
Get out of here. Take a walk. Go back to where you came from. You may not like what you hear on this show, but if I am factually incorrect, prove it to me. Obama is the result of a mother who abandoned him several times. It does not matter that she is not alive. We are dealing with a president who is psychologically flawed and quite dangerous, in my opinion, as a result of the psychological damage. I have every obligation to you as an audience to bring as much of my education to bear on this program as possible. I am not NPR. I am not paid by the government to put out garbage that you lap up and feed to the children.
Savage.
Apparently, I got under the skin of some of the Obama worshippers by talking about his psychological profile as it relates to his mother, Ann Dunham, God rest her soul. The mere fact that she has passed away does not mean that we are not interested in what effects this strange childhood have had upon our president and what it's done to him as a man. Because we Americans are affected by this man's decisions, are we not? Now, if this man was abandoned by his mother, which he was, if he was separated from his mother several times, we have to understand that this excessive separation in the absence of a father has led to a pattern of idealized control that Obama has not only imposed upon himself, but now wants to impose on the rest of us in America. So when I said Obama's mother, Ann Dunham, was a free spirit who traipsed around the world with multiple different men, I also said, while there's nothing inherently wrong with that, you can't ignore the effect that it had on her children, especially when one of those is our president. The mother went globetrotting from Hawaii to Indonesia to Pakistan. Sometimes she took her son, sometimes she left her son behind. This has an effect upon a child. It shapes the man. And if you don't want to hear it, it's because you don't want to face reality. But I have an obligation to bring as much education and insight as I can to this program, or I wouldn't be in business. And I did celebrate my 15th year in talk radio, March 21st, 2009. And I didn't survive 15 years because I don't know what I'm talking about. I have a phenomenally large audience. This is the third largest radio show in America, and I am not syndicated by a major. I am the little guy. I am the underdog. The number one is the General Motors of talk radio. That's the golfer. The number two is the Wallbanger. He's the Chrysler of talk radio. And both of them are supported by the equivalent of TARP funds, which are Republican Party boosters, period, end of story. I mean, don't forget that Rush supported Bush right until the end. He carried water for Bush, and then all of a sudden when he saw Bush was history, suddenly he said, I'm sorry, I carried water for him. You can listen to anybody you want. But they're conducting a war against Michael Savage in ways that you know and in ways you don't know. And I'm going to fight back any way I can. Now, having gotten that out of the way, I'm going to go back to regular programming. And I'm going to invite your calls in the Savage Nation. I said to you that Obama, we compared him at first to, before the election, to Neville Chamberlain. But I don't think he's necessarily just Neville Chamberlain. Today I compared him ideologically to the Egyptian pharaoh Akhenaten. And I asked for an Egyptologist to elucidate this for you, because many of you, in fact, are educated, but many of you did not have the luxury of a college education, or you didn't study these things. And if you're going to invest time in a talk show, you pick up a nugget here, you pick up a nugget there, and your neurons, if they don't expand, because neurons don't expand, you add brain cells. Let's put it to you that way. You add brain cells when you listen to the Savage Nation. You may not like what you hear, but your brain gets better. Okay? Barry in New York on WOR. What do you know about this pharaoh I've mentioned?
Well, I studied Egyptian culture and spirituality, and what Akhenaten did, he disarmed the military.
Okay. You studied Egypt?
Yeah, I still do, yes.
Okay. And Akhenaten disarmed the Egyptian military. For what reason did he do that?
Because his belief in Atem, he believed in total nonviolence. All men were brothers. He believed in Atem. All men were brothers. He believed in nonviolence. He believed in total peace. He didn't believe in hurting anything.
All right. Well, that's a very nice belief system for a religious teacher, but not for a world leader who lives in the real world. And what happened to the Egyptians as a result of this disarming of a great Egyptian army?
He disarmed them. He took their swords away from them. He gave them flowers.
Okay, but I'm saying, was Egypt harmed as a result?
Yes, it was. The province, well, you know, we call it Palestine or Israel. Now it's Israel. It was Canaan then. The people who we know now today as the Hebrew, they were called Hirabu, they were invading. The Hittites were coming in. The garrison in Canaan, they begged them for 20 years to send the military, to send the army. The princes of Canaan said, send the army. If you send the army now, we can save the province. For 20 years, he did nothing.
Very interesting. So now you understand why I brought up this obscure Egyptian pharaoh, Akhenaten, today. And Barry, I thank you for your articulation on the Savage Nation. Wonderful audience. Diane in Virginia has a great call, but I want to go to San Francisco, my hometown, KNEW land. Dave, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Michael, good afternoon.
Thank you.
Sounds like another failure, like Richard the Lionhearted, who failed to take Jerusalem back.
Wait, who are we talking about now?
I was just commenting to start Richard the Lionhearted, who failed to take Jerusalem back from the Muslims. If he would have done that, we'd have a different world. But the reason I called is what I told your screener was I heard the Gates comment. I think it was today or yesterday.
Robert Gates, our defense secretary, who we were pleased at first to find out Obama kept on as defense secretary. We now find out that he's a politician who, frankly, was kept on for one reason, and that was to make sure the military was smaller rather than larger.
Right. I was in the Air Force. I was a test pilot in the Air Force. This stuff I can't really talk about, but this stuff just floors me, Michael. The man just must be under Barack's thumb.
Well, he's a politician, and any politician understands one thing, which is self-advancement and survival and self-enrichment. It has nothing to do with the nation anymore. Now, when have we last had a good defense secretary is the question. Why don't you look back through the last 50 years and tell me when we had a good defense secretary? But that's too esoteric a question. Kansas City, Alex, welcome to the program. What's on your mind? I unfortunately am looking for the phone. Here it is. Alex, go ahead, please, from Kansas City.
All right, thanks, Mike. I was calling about the Egyptian pharaoh Akhenaten.
Yes, sir.
He, like everybody has stated, he imposed the first Egyptian universal god, and he disarmed the army. And upon his death, you ask this question, the citizens of Egypt immediately turned back to their old way of life.
They turned back to their old, idol worship?
Yes, their old polytheism.
No, but in disarming the military, was Egypt invaded as a result of it at that time? Well, it almost doesn't matter, because right now the answer can be seen in the newspapers. Obama calls for a nuclear-free world on a Saturday, and North Korea launches a rocket on Sunday, or something to that effect. Obama, instead of stopping the launch of the rocket and showing that he is the leader of the free world, he does nothing. He whines to the UN, a bunch of you-know-whats. I consider them nothing but child-molesting, worthless creatures in the United Nations. A bunch of child molesters from Brussels run that place. And he goes to them and says, please do something about North Korea. And they say to him, well, we're too busy chasing down hookers and business deals to do anything about it. It's frightening. It really is. Norwalk, Connecticut. Nick, you're on the Savage Nation. Nick, go ahead, please.
Yes, Nick. Dr. Savage. I just want to bring up a point that I haven't heard in the media, which is that today in Turkey, Barack Obama honored Mustafa Kemal, who was responsible for the genocide of millions of Greeks and Armenians about 75.
What do you mean by he honored them?
Well, he was at a ceremony where it was either the 75th anniversary.
Well, I know that the Armenian folks want him to acknowledge, and they have wanted many American presidents to acknowledge the genocide of Armenians by the Turks, the Ottoman Turks, the Muslims. And no president has acknowledged that it was an actual genocide, which it was. I don't think that Obama's any different in that regard. He's the same as Bush. Bush didn't acknowledge the Armenian genocide by the Ottoman Turks, did he?
No, he didn't. But it was also Greeks, too. Over a million Greeks died in that genocide.
Yes, and all you have to do is there's a contemporary movie, rather contemporary, it's called America, America by one of the great American film directors, Ilya Kazan. Have you ever seen it?
No, I haven't.
Well, let me tell the people about it, because you should go out and rent it. Ilya Kazan was one of America's great directors. He was not honored by his own peers because he was not a communist. They hated him for loving America. It was only late in his career that the vermin of Hollywood gave him an award, and they did so reluctantly because he loved America too much. Anyway, Ilya Kazan did some great movies, one of which was called America, America, which I highly recommend. In fact, I'd like to get it myself in the near future. And it's the story of one Greek boy from a small village in Greece who comes to America. It opens with the poor people of his village, his mother, his father, whatever, raising everything they have, silver candlesticks, whatever they have, they put together, they can send the young man to the promised land. And they're still doing it when the Ottoman Turks invade the village, the Muslims. They burn the town to the ground, and the villagers flee into the church, and the Muslims burn the church to the ground, killing everybody in it. Now, that is a reality of what happened. This young man is then sort of taken in under the protection of one of the Muslim officers, but in exchange for this protection, he must become the officer's young lover, his boyfriend, his sex object, in other words. Forget lover. Lover doesn't apply to someone who is forced into sex slavery. So we won't use the word lover. That's something they would use in San Francisco to describe this behavior. He is forced to submit to the fellow. To make a long story short, through the long trials and tribulations, and I won't repeat every ounce of the story, every turn of the dialogue, in this story, he eventually gets to America after having lost everything, been deceived by people, and he comes here, and in one of the last scenes, he arrives in the docks in New York, as so many of our ancestors did. Many of you listening to the show had grandfathers or great-grandfathers who came here and kissed the ground. The character comes to America, looks at the skyline of New York, gets off the ship, kisses the earth, and that's the end of that story and the end of that movie, America, America, by Ilya Kazan. For that reason, he was hated by the American scum, the American left, who called him a traitor. They claimed he was a McCarthyite. He was an American through and through. And, of course, he was then, through his life, produced some other great movies. 1-800-449-8255. Charlie. New York. Actually, Bill in New York. Terrific caller. Bill, welcome to the program. Thanks for listening on WOR. Go ahead, please.
You know, I had just a comment about the psychological aspects of Barack Obama.
Go ahead. I'd love to hear it.
I'm a biracial person who was brought up without the benefit of a mother and father. My father walked out when I was 10 years old. My mother struggled. I believe that, I felt this when he was running, that psychologically there's so many issues that a person, a young man in that situation, has to deal with. I never believed when I looked him in the eye on the TV and he stood up there that he really has the self-confidence to really be president.
So then you tend to agree with me that he has a very deep insecurity.
Yeah, and, I don't blame him.
But listen to how I'm not blaming him. I mean, we're way past worrying about why it happened. We're interested in how it happened and what its effect has had on him and on us. Listen, I concluded in Obama on the Couch as follows. I said, it seems clear that this excessive separation in the absence of a father has led to a pattern of control that Obama has not only imposed on himself, but now wants to impose on the United States of America. That was my main point.
Well, I agree with that. The bottom line is how a person with those issues, can we afford to have that type of quality in a leader?
We have it whether we'd like to or not, and I'm doing a psychological portrait of the president years before historians will do it, but they will learn from this program as they listen to it. I realize I'm not Doris Kearns Goodwin, the plagiarist, who is featured as a great presidential historian on every other television show, that sort of emaciated, skinny, skanky college professory woman who all the liberals hold up as a college, as a presidential historian because she loves liberal presidents and hates conservative ones, the plagiarist, by the way. But I do a better job than she does. Oregon, Charlie, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I just want to congratulate you for your astute interaction with that woman. You held her feet to the fire, and you made it very logical.
But I asked her. She said that what I did was offensive and low class in analyzing Obama's psychology. I said to her, where was I factually wrong? And she just went on and on and on, calling me names without answering me, which means that she agrees with me.
Well, exactly, but at the same time, this is the cultural malaise that our country's gotten into.
Yes, she sounds like a college teacher who's threatened students with diminishing grades if they don't listen to her Maoism, which is this is the way it is, Don't argue with me. Charlie, thanks for the call. The time is time for a wonderful, excellent break where you'll hear all of my supporters on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I state clearly and with conviction America's commitment to seek the peace and security of a world without nuclear weapons.
Great speech for a university group of pacifist socialists who don't live in the real world, who want the police to keep them safe, and yet they hate the police, who want the military to keep them safe, and yet hate the military. Palm Springs, Nathan, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, I'm second to none in my disgust with Barack Obama, but I'm curious. What do you think he could have done about the missile?
Very simple. If I was commander-in-chief, those missiles wouldn't have left the launch pad. The launch pad would have been atomized before they were launched.
Well, all right.
Let's be reasonable about this. How hard is it to figure out that we have the most powerful navy in the world that is nothing but a paper navy? We have ships off the coast of North Korea that were sent there with missile capabilities that go all the way up to the nuclear. This did not require a nuclear strike. It required simply a few cruise missiles could have stopped the launch. Now you say, well, how do we know where it was? For God's sakes, they published pictures of the launch pad.
Yeah, but wouldn't that have led to a third war that we would be involved with?
What war? What war? With who?
With North Korea.
North Korea has no Air Force or no Navy. What war?
Missiles. They have missiles and they have a nuclear bomb.
Wait a minute. What missiles do they have? The man just launched a missile with nothing on it.
He has missiles. That's where the Iranians use their missiles based on.
Oh, you're talking about not rockets, but missiles.
Missiles, rockets.
Uh-huh. So the next step is he puts, a nuclear weapon on it, and he wastes a piece of Alaska, and we say, what can we do now? We don't want to go to war with him?
He wastes the whole South Korea, maybe.
Nathan, let's be clear here. Korea wouldn't exist 1 second were it not for China. Korea is China's mad dog. Do you agree with me on that?
I think so, yes.
Okay. To me, Korea is China's junkyard dog. And if China did not want this to happen, it wouldn't have happened. This is China sending a message to Obama. And Obama's message was whimpering to the United Nations saying, please help me. And what did the United Nations do, this great body of peace? Nothing.
Oh, by the way, I'm an Elia Kazan fan also. And whenever I argue about HUAC and the blacklist, I always tell my liberal friends, just substitute the word Nazi for communist and then tell me it was wrong.
All right. But to answer your question, what could Obama have ordered be done to have stopped the junkyard dog, Kim Jong, mentally ill, from launching the rocket? Remember, they warned him not to, did they not? Just as Israel's been barking and barking and barking against Iran. And what has Iran done? Nothing. They don't take David seriously anymore. They know David is an empty shell. David has done nothing. If you do it, they're going to this or do that, nothing. Israel's another paper tiger.
Yeah. I
am telling you what's coming, because the entire West has no leadership. Don't make any mistake about it. We have the military capacity, and so does Israel, to stop these maniacs before they do get nuclear weapons. The problem is we have corrupt, weak leadership, both in Israel and America, let alone England, let alone France, and let alone Germany. Show me one strong leader, I'll show you one, Italy. Berlusconi. But he's not a player with regard to this, is he? Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255. We have about a minute left in this hour, and then another big hour. The main thing is that Obama talks a big game, but he doesn't walk the big game, and he's putting us in danger. And I'll go back to what I said at the beginning. He's an ideologically dangerous man, just like the Egyptian pharaoh Akhenaten, which I mentioned on this show. Many of you say Neville Chamberlain. Fine. We know Neville Chamberlain. I understand that. That's baby history. Now let's do adolescent history. Go back to an ancient Egyptian pharaoh named Akhenaten, and you will see that this man is following in his footsteps, which makes him a national security risk. He is slashing weapons and missile defense programs. He has cut back on the F-22 fighter jet. He has cut back on the Army's Future Combat Systems Modernization Program. The plans to build a shield to defend against missile attacks by rogue states will be scaled back under this ideologically dangerous liberal college professor with deep psychological damage as a result of his childhood. Any other questions?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here's what we've been talking about today on the Savage Nation. I believe Obama is dangerously naive. Should we continue to let the police be outgunned? And who's next to steal an idea from Savage, such as Fox News calling themselves the Fox Nation? Obama demonstrated his dangerous naivete several times over the weekend. North Korea and its deranged militant leader, Kim Jong, mentally ill, fired a missile. And even though Obama knew it was coming, and even though Obama knew where it was coming from, and even though the U.S. military had pictures of the launch site, the great one decided not to take it out before it left the ground. Instead, he gave a speech in Europe. What kind of message does that send, other than a message of supine weakness? And if that weren't enough, the professor went to Turkey and said that the United States is not at war with Islam. Well, that's a great thought, Mr. President, but there are many people in Islam who are at war with the United States. Barack Obama's goodwill tour around Europe is still in full swing, but is he really representing American interests or his own very narrow left-wing agenda? For some perspective on this, let's go to a friend of the Savage Nation, Dr. Peter Breggin. Dr. Breggin, is Obama putting himself out there as the community organizer of the world?
Yes, Michael. President Obama wants to community organize the world. Martin Luther King Jr. used community organizing as a strategy for achieving long overdue human rights, especially the freedom of African Americans to participate on an equal footing in society. But too often, community organizers promote their own power and political ambitions by stirring up the passions of people who feel impotent. The organizers become rich and powerful, but their constituents remain trapped by their feelings of frustration and helplessness. In sharp contrast, generations of Americans, including untold millions of immigrants and the poor, have become genuinely empowered by feeling grateful for their liberty and opportunity, by expressing their individuality, and by taking responsibility for their lives. On a break during his G20 trip, President Obama conducted a town meeting of European students in Strasbourg, France, that smacked of community organizing. Obama played to their passions of resentment and disempowerment by talking up Europe and talking down America. Our president said to the young students, "In America, there's a failure to appreciate Europe's leading role in the world. Instead of celebrating your dynamic union and seeking to partner with you to meet common challenges, there have been times where America has shown arrogance and been dismissive, even derisive." Of course, anyone who's been to Europe, and especially to France, knows that he was actually describing European attitudes toward Americans. When President Obama then goes on to mention Europe's Amerophobic attitudes, he sounds much less critical of them.
Well, that's the impression I got.
Obama doesn't specify what's good about America, what we've done, such as saving the French in World Wars I and II, winning the Cold War and fighting the war on terror for them. Instead, he talks of a partnership in which we, quote, listen and learn, as if it's time for America to learn from Europe about politics and government. Toward the end of his speech, Obama received some of the most enthusiastic applause when he boasted about closing Guantanamo Bay and promised that America, quote, will not torture. In his Q&A, he once again mentioned both inflammatory subjects and threw in Abu Ghraib as an additional incitement. The pandering president of the United States highlighted the three biggest sources of inspiration to those who hate America: Gitmo, torture, and Abu Ghraib. The Europeans don't like Obama's one good policy, winning in Afghanistan, but they love his willingness to walk and talk like a European. He gives voice not only to their feelings of helplessness and frustration, but also to their anger and malicious envy toward the one nation that has not as yet sold its soul to collectivism.
We're talking with Peter Breggin about Obama, the world community organizer. Psychologically, Dr. Breggin, what does this mean about Obama's attitude and expectations for his own country?
Our own president doesn't identify with America, and indeed seems to contain within himself an abiding resentment of the country. This should be no surprise from a man whose chief mentor and spiritual guide for decades remains a loud, proud, and unrepentant Amerophobe. Obama can criticize America without feeling any inner contradiction, because he seems to see himself not as a great patriot, but as a great man of the world. On MSNBC, of all places, one commentator critically remarked that Obama came across in Strasbourg as if he thought of himself as president of Europe. Not nearly, I'd say. Rather, president of the world. Toward the end of his speech, his rhetoric became scary, approaching demagoguery. At a time when riots were breaking out against the G20 and against NATO, when glass was breaking and buildings were burning, Obama spoke glowingly about, quote, revolutionary times, and he also spoke about students inspired, quote, to revolution. When the Q&A began, Obama picked the first questioner from the audience. When he realized she was an American, he became embarrassed, flinched, paced away, and then stammered, "Oh, I called. Now, I just want to say I did not call on the American on purpose." Couldn't he have said instead, "An American? Well, hello, my compatriot. What a pleasant surprise." Later, when Obama once again mistakenly called on an American, he actually tried to stop her from speaking. But she explained that she had double nationality, American and French. Like a Roman emperor asking the mobs for thumbs up or thumbs down, Obama then asked the assembled students, and I quote, "What do you think? Should we let her ask her question?" There was scattered affirmative applause, and Obama let the young woman go on. It was chilling. Recently, Larry King, one of Obama's fans, declared, "We do have 300 million people. You can be individuals as much as you like, but somebody's got to think for the masses." Somebody is. His name is President Obama. But I believe that the so-called masses, meaning millions of individual American citizens, are starting to catch on.
Ah, come on, Dr. Breggin. What about this urgency that Obama's moving with? A record number of executive orders, these huge bills that he's attempting to run through Congress. What's his real hurry?
President Obama acts as if he's only got 4 years in which to work his magic, and he's hell-bent on transforming America. If he's voted out of office after his first term, where will he go? He'll become the symbolic president of the world. Americans, somewhat like Europeans, are recently feeling disempowered. From the corporations to Congress, great power groups have gained momentum on their own. In past times, Americans responded by gathering their wits and returning to their roots in freedom, individualism, and responsibility. But this time, a new kind of leader has emerged. A world community organizer. He may become the greatest threat to our constitutional government since the struggle to achieve independence and the Civil War. The future of America does not lie where Obama is taking us, toward becoming a nation like any other, a disempowered, impotent aggregate of disenfranchised citizens who see their future in a more ordinary America that has its place in the world that is far more submissive.
But don't you think that the United States, its culture and ideals are larger than any single man?
The real truth is this. America remains the one hope of the world. However much her great foundation is being shaken, she remains the bastion of freedom. And our strength lies not in being led, but in being free. Free as individuals to plan and to direct our own lives. This brings us to what I call the primary principles, the refrain of my weekly report. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for all your gifts and opportunities. Become a source of love. This is Dr. Peter Bregan urging you to live like an American. You can listen to all these reports and obtain transcripts at Bregan.com.
Dr. Bregan, thanks for being on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
During a speech in Turkey, the first Muslim country that Obama has visited as president of the U.S., B.O. said that we're not and will never be at war with Islam. Well, that's wonderful that many of the Muslims are at war with us, but let's listen to the Anointed One.
I know there have been difficulties these last few years. I know that the trust that binds the United States and Turkey has been strained. And I know that strain is shared in many places where the Muslim faith is practiced. So let me say this as clearly as I can. The United States is not and will never be at war with Islam.
I've told you before in this program that while not all Muslims are terrorists, almost all terrorists seem to be Muslim. And given that we have been and continue to be engaged in a war on terrorism, well, at least we used to be, isn't it just a bit irresponsible to imply that there's nothing approaching a conflict between radical Islam and the West? Now, with a report on our friends, the North Koreans, I'd like to bring on defense expert K.T. McFarland. K.T., what is North Korea's game here?
Well, the North Koreans tested a missile, and it fizzled. But so did Obama's response. With a lot of fanfare, North Korea fired the Taipodong 2 missile, a three-stage rocket capable of launching a satellite into space or potentially a nuclear weapon at an enemy. They, of course, claimed it was to launch a satellite, but nobody believed them. The technology and engineering is the same either way. But in any event, the launch was only partially successful. The first stages did seem to work, but the final stage and its payload, supposedly the satellite, ended up somewhere in the Pacific. But even if the North Koreans do have a lot of work to do before they perfect this technology, that missile test is another step in the direction of their developing long-range nuclear weapons, which technically could reach the west coast of the United States. I am less concerned that the North Korean leaders are going to wake up some Tuesday morning and decide to nuke, say, your hometown of San Francisco. But I am concerned that they're going to sell these weapons to bad actors around the world. Think of this missile test as a product demonstration for potential buyers. North Korea doesn't have natural resources to export, and they don't make anything the world wants to buy. Their only export is missiles and nuclear reactors. We know the Iran missile, the Shahab, is based on a North Korean design. We know the Syrian nuclear reactor that the Israelis bombed 2 years ago originated in North Korea. And according to the British press, Iran had engineers and technicians in place in Pyongyang for this missile launch, just as they did for the 2006 missile launch in North Korea. But anyway, the missile fizzled. So what? Don't the North Koreans just look like a bunch of Keystone Cops? Well, yes, they do. But that's not the end of the story, because Obama's response fizzled too. Last week, he threatened severe consequences if the North Koreans went ahead. Well, now they've done it. What are these severe consequences? He's referred it to the UN. The UN already has two sets of sanctions on the books against North Korea, and they've been ineffective. Why does he think this time another round of sanctions could be effective when the others haven't been? And in fact, it's even worse than this, because the UN did meet over the weekend, and they issued a watered-down resolution, not even a proposal, because the Russians and the Chinese wouldn't go along with anything stronger.
We're speaking with K.T. McFarland about North Korea's missile test. KT, the North Koreans are a puppet of the Chinese. So aren't these actions by North Korea really engineered by the Chinese?
Remember when Biden said that the world would test Obama? Well, I think they just have. The Chinese, using the North Koreans, set a trap for Obama, and he walked right into it. The North Koreans don't do anything without China's approval, because China literally owns them. That supplies their food, their fuel, their gas. And if the Chinese had wanted to stop the North Korean missile launch, all they had to do was pick up the phone. So the fact that the launch went off, especially the timing of it in the middle of Obama's big victory lap around Europe, that was all deliberate. The one thing I did learn from my old boss, Henry Kissinger, is that the Chinese don't do anything by accident. And right now, they are pinging us all around the world very deliberately. They're warning us they may not lend us money to pay for Obama's spending programs. They're proposing the world go off the dollar as the reserve currency. They're harassing our unarmed Navy ship off the Chinese coast. They're bragging about a new ballistic missile capability to shoot at our carriers. They're developing a blue water Navy. They've got a new fleet of silent subs. And they sent ships off the coast of Somalia. They're flexing their muscles all around the world. And they're showing us and the whole world that they are a superpower and they want to be reckoned with as such. They knew Obama would have to condemn the North Korean missile launch, and they calculated that he wasn't going to shoot it down. They figured rightly that he'd probably refer it to the UN, where, guess what, they hold a veto, and they could stand in the way of anything stronger than a slap on the wrist and a harsh letter. So Obama, by promising these serious consequences and then not delivering on them, he's been made to look impotent. And if we have no leverage with China now, what are we going to do a few years down the road when they own even more of our debt? They are literally holding the mortgage to our house, and they can call that mortgage in any time they want. But finally, Michael, there is one more wrinkle to all this, and that's Iran. By threatening serious consequences to North Korea and then not delivering on them, what's Iran supposed to conclude from this? What's their lesson in all this? Candidate Obama said a nuclear Iran would be catastrophic. Hillary is warned of serious consequences if Iran presses ahead with their nuclear program. But Iran is now seeing, right up close, what serious consequences mean in an Obama administration. It means they refer it to the UN with a harsh letter to follow. So the takeaway from this is Iran looks at this reaction and says, right, we should continue and accelerate our development of nuclear weapons because the one thing we can be sure of is that Obama isn't going to do anything to stop it. Michael, it's great to be with you again. This is KT McFarland. Please visit my website, which is ktmcfarland.com. And it's now over to you and the Savage Nation.
Thank you for your report, KT. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
All right, here's what's on michaelsavage.com. Obama declares U.S. not at war with Islam. Well, that's true, but it seems to me that many Muslims are at war with the U.S., Mr. Obama. How come you left that out? From another source, 58% of moronic Americans believe Islam is a peaceful religion. I guess they also believe that the tooth fairy is coming. From the Wall Street Journal, Obama team's finances released. You're not going to believe it. Grifters all. Here's some good news on michaelsavage.com. The Supreme Court today let the conviction of Abu Jamal stand. They will not take up his claims that prosecutors improperly excluded blacks from the jury that convicted him of executing a Philadelphia police officer. He should have only been executed 30 years ago. Black Caucus wants normal relations with communist Cuba. The chief communist amongst the Black Caucus is Barbara Lee, the very same Barbara Lee who sat there during the police funerals in Oakland, making my flesh crawl and my hair stand up. She wants normal relations with communist Cuba. With a rocket, Obama's hope is shot down to earth. Unbelievable. Read the story. It's on my website. U.S. Muslims are debating how much to help the FBI. A petition is urging Muslims to limit outreach with the FBI. That, of course, comes from our good friends at CAIR, Real Friends of the Savage Nation. Hold it. Maybe there's something on the left here that should be plugged in. Ah. And finally, on the bottom, you can't miss this story. You got to scroll all the way down to michaelsavage.com. You read this whole story about an 85-year-old woman who has written, they say, unadulterated smut about her life. You're not going to believe the story. She's got a real famous name in America. Her last name is Vanderbilt. Her name is Gloria Vanderbilt. You will never believe who she is. Well, I should say you'll never believe who her son is, Anderson Cooper. I've been highly critical of many of Obama's nominations, and to talk about the latest scam of one of Obama's nominees is Cliff Kincaid from Accuracy and Media. Cliff, thanks for coming on to talk about this.
Thank you, Michael, for having me on the show again. We've got some really hard news to report today concerning another one of Obama's outrageous nominations, and there's been many of them. In this case, we don't have any evidence of tax cheating, at least not yet, but we do have quite a bit of interesting stuff about a guy named Harold Koh, the dean of Yale Law School, who's been announced as Obama's nomination for the top legal job in the State Department under Hillary Clinton. He would, if he's confirmed, become the legal advisor for the U.S. Department of State. This nomination has generated some controversy already. A number of conservatives in the media have pointed out some controversial things about Harold Koh. But we did some additional digging, and what we found out is pretty astonishing and even weird.
Weird? How so?
When you analyze somebody like Harold Koh, Obama himself, you've got to look at the influences on their lives, how they came to adopt these views they hold. In Obama's case, as we discussed on your show, we looked into the role of Frank Marshall Davis, his Communist Party mentor. But in the case of Harold Koh, we've dug up some interesting stuff about the guy who really taught him everything he knows about law. And the main gripe about Harold Koh is that he doesn't believe in the supremacy of U.S. law and the U.S. Constitution. Instead, he wants to subordinate our legal system to what is euphemistically called international law. Well, that's worrisome enough. But what we've discovered is that his mentor, in fact, his law professor, was a guy named Louis Sohn, S-O-H-N, and I have the whole story up on AIM.org about this relationship. And Louis Sohn, although he carries some fancy academic titles and was a professor and international lawyer himself for many decades, was even in on the founding of the UN, that he's been called a respected scholar, but he really is a crackpot, and I mean that, because this guy, Louis Sohn, and remember, here's the guy who taught Harold Koh everything he knows about international law. Louis Sohn was a believer in world government. I mean, that's not just my opinion. This is what he believed, and he was a major figure in creating and crafting the Law of the Sea Treaty and other so-called global constitutions for U.S. and human affairs. Sohn, who was a professor at Harvard, wrote a book, and I got a hold of it. It's an incredible book, hard to find, but it's called World Peace Through World Law.
We're talking with Cliff Kincaid from Accuracy and Media. Cliff, this guy Louis Sohn seems like a pure internationalist through and through.
And get this, Michael, he wanted, and he sets this out in black and white, he wanted to transform the United Nations into a world government with hundreds of thousands of troops, military bases, and he wanted the UN to be armed with nuclear weapons.
You really have to be joking.
This is how he thinks world peace could be maintained through this all-powerful world government, which, of course, I think you and I would agree, is more like a global dictatorship. He said the purpose, and this is Louis Sohn speaking, would be to disarm, quote, each and every nation and to deter or suppress any attempted international violence. Through this, quote, world authority, the United Nations world government or global dictatorship would not only maintain the peace, in his view, but it would collect revenue from the nations of the world through a, quote, United Nations revenue system. This wasn't all. I mentioned how this guy Sohn helped create the UN's law, the Sea Treaty, but he also came up with ideas for a United Nations Outer Space Authority to regulate outer space, a World Development Authority, and that's interesting in light of recent news about Obama at this G20 summit agreeing to spend another $1 trillion on the rest of the world through the International Monetary Fund. Lewis Hohn also believed in world judicial tribunals, and of course those have come to pass. We've now got the International Criminal Court. We've got ad hoc international tribunals dealing with Rwanda and the former Yugoslavia. But this United Nations Peace Force, as Lewis Hohn described it, would have a strength of between 200,000 and 400,000 troops. Again, these would be UN troops, and there would be a United Nations Peace Force reserve with a strength of between 300,000 and 600,000. So, you know, in total, you're looking at a United Nations world government, a United Nations-sponsored world government with a with an army approaching 1 million people. He went on, Lewis Hohn said, that the UN Peace Force would have the most modern weapons and equipment, including nuclear weapons. So he envisions that the United States will give up its nuclear weapons and apparently turn them over to the UN, which will then have a sole monopoly on the use of force in the world, supposedly to maintain peace, even having access to nuclear weapons. Well, this is the guy, Lewis Hohn, and this is all set out in his book called The World Peace Through World Law. This is the guy who was the teacher and mentor for Obama's nominee as the top legal advisor for the State Department, again, Harold Hanju Ko, the dean of Yale Law School. And, I mean, this is beyond worrisome. This is terrifying that the thought of this kind of guy with these views becoming the top lawyer at the State Department, but seen in the light of some of the other appointments Obama has made, it's consistent with his push, which is now out in the open, for the U.S. to become really subsumed into this, quote, new world order that everybody keeps talking about, in which our sovereignty has been sacrificed for the, quote, greater good.
Okay, Cliff, have people been made aware, especially the Senate, about the background of this new nominee for the State Department?
We're trying to raise the alarm about Harold Ko because let's face it, the Republicans in the Senate haven't stood up very much at all. They only two of them had the courage to vote against Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, only two. We only have 21 votes against Eric Holder as Obama's Attorney General. But when this nomination of Harold Ko comes up, perhaps some of these Republicans and hopefully some Democrats will take the time to examine how strange, how bizarre his views are. He does believe in subordinating U.S. law and the U.S. Constitution to what he calls international law, but how he was trained for this position by a crackpot, this guy Lewis Hohn, who was a world federalist. That is, that's a euphemism for somebody who believes in world government. So we've gotten the goods on this guy. We've done the research and investigations that, of course, you won't find in the regular media. But that's what we're doing at Accuracy in Media, and you can read all about this guy at AIM.org.
Cliff Kincaid, thanks for this amazing research.
Michael, I appreciate you having me on the show again to talk about this kind of thing. It's an uphill struggle to try to derail this nomination, not to mention get out the truth about him. But thanks to you, perhaps we're going to get this information into as many hands as quickly as possible and make a difference.
Well, okay, Cliff, it's a nice thought, but the Senate has completely forgotten its advise and consent role in regards to these nominees. This is the Savage Nation. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Islam, as it is practiced by many extremists, is totally incompatible with the modern world. The radical Islamofascists treat their women like cattle, approve of the death of civilians for the purpose of religious war, kill homosexuals, and live in a way that has not changed since the 9th century. In a fundamental way, Islam and the West are at war. Call it a Cold War, if you will, but I'm not sure the victims of 9/11, the victims of the Mumbai bombing, the victims of the Bali bombing, the victims of the Madrid bombing would agree with you, Mr. Obama. Another interesting thing that Obama said in his speech was that Islam has done much for the United States, helped shape this country. Let's listen again to the words of the professor.
We will convey our deep appreciation for the Islamic faith, which has done so much over the centuries to shape the world, including in my own country.
He said the Islamic faith has done much for my own country. That's interesting. Can you name a single positive influence that Islam has had on America? Can you name a single prominent Muslim in the history of the United States who has impacted the country in a positive way? In fact, very few Muslims historically immigrated to the United States. Maybe Obama's words are just a part of the big lie. If he repeats it often enough, maybe enough morons will think it's true. All right, play Blue Monday.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday, oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time to play.
Who in the media has stolen ideas from Michael Savage that you know of? When is the last time you were watching television or listening to the radio and said to yourself, wait a minute, hold it, I heard that first on Michael Savage's show? 1-800-449-8255. Obama and the Muslim world. Obama and the Muslim world. Now, he said that the United States is not at war with Islam. He is right about that. But unfortunately, many in the Islamic world are at war with the United States. He left that out. The fact of the matter is that Islam, as it is practiced by many extremists around the globe, is incompatible with the modern world. The radical Islamofascists still treat their women like cattle. The radical Islamofascists still stone homosexuals to death. The radical Islamofascists still live in a way that has not changed since the 9th century. In a fundamental way, Islam and the West are at war. Call it a Cold War, if you will. But I'm not sure that the victims of 9/11, the victims of the Bali bombing, the victims of the Madrid bombing, or the victims of the London bombing, or even the bombings in Bombay, I don't think that their families would agree with Obama. Another thing that Obama said in his speech, which was curious, to say the least, is that Islam has done much for the United States. It was sort of an add-on. I challenge you, listening to the show, to be fair here on the Savage Nation, can you think of one contemporary Islamic contribution to America other than Paul Anka and Barack Hussein Obama? How have they shaped the world since there was an almost zero Muslim population until quite recently? How has Islam shaped our country? Why is he saying these things? Why did he kiss the Saudi king's hand last week when all of the other leaders only shook the king's hand, which is acceptable from the point of view of protocol? Why did this man bow down to him? It's very frightening. Very, very frightening indeed. Everything we feared during the election is coming home to roost. The problem is the sheeple out there don't even understand the danger they are in. The sheep will never understand the danger they are in until it's too late. Obama is ideologically and dangerously naive, like the Egyptian pharaoh Akhenaten. It doesn't matter whether he is ideological and dangerously naive or he is a stealth activist for an enemy of America. It makes no difference. He is as much a national security risk to this nation as Cheney and Bush were in their own way. We are being undermined left and right under Obama. The man who put him in power, in my opinion, is George Soros. George Soros, the money changer in the Temple of Freedom, George Soros came out and said that the dollar has to be replaced by a basket of world currencies. This basket case for whom there is not enough profit in the entire world. He is the nowhere man who will suck the world into his horn. It doesn't matter to him what happens as long as he makes more money. Soros, an immigrant to America who could not wait to cut America's heart out, has said that he would like to see the U.S. dollar replaced as the world currency. He would like to see it replaced by a basket of currencies. Now, remember who's saying this. This is the man who put Obama in power, number one. This is the man who made $1 billion by shorting the English pound. This is the man who stirred up anti-Semitism around the world by almost busting out the Malaysian currency. This man now wants to break the U.S. dollar over his knee. So I say to you, Obama is either ideologically and dangerously naive, like the Egyptian pharaoh Akhenaten, or he is a stealth underminer of America. It doesn't really matter which one. He is a national security risk, in my opinion. Now, what's interesting is a poll came out over the weekend, and it's a poll from the Pew Research Center, which is a left-wing poll. But even they say that the partisan gap in the Obama job approval is the widest in modern history. Now, let me explain that because it's very interesting. Obama has the most polarized early job approval ratings of any president in the past four decades. Let me explain what that means. He has a high Democratic poll rating, very, very high, but he has a very low approval rating among Republicans. So you say, well, isn't that typical? No, it's not typical. Because there is an 88% job approval among Democrats, and an only 27% job approval among Republicans. That's a 51% partisan gap. A 51% partisan gap, right? But if you look at the difference in George W. Bush's job performance in April of his administration, a few months into his term, there was a much smaller gap. Democrats actually liked Bush in the beginning, you see. And if you go back, even to Bill Clinton, the gap between Clinton's Democrat approval and Republican approval was substantially smaller than what Obama faces right now. And if you go back even further, you will see an even smaller differential, even amongst Jimmy Carter and Richard Nixon. In fact, the majority of Republicans approved of Jimmy Carter's job performance in late March of 1977, and a majority of Democrats approved of Nixon's performance.
Savage.